With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial, and with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown, and through adaptable problem-solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
This FPL season has definitely been go, go, go. A nonstop hustle all the time. Matches, deadlines, unexpected blank and double game weeks, on top of everything the real world has had in store. Sometimes you need a moment to turn off and hit reset. That's when you reach for Coors Light. It's made to chill. For me personally, supporting Fulham during this last year has been a true roller coaster ride. Honestly, when that Adama Traore goal flew past Areola in the 92nd minute of Game Week 31, the only thing that saved my mental state, the only thing that calmed my nerves, was cracking open a Coors Light. There's only one beer out there that's literally made to chill, and that's Coors Light. The mountains on the bottles and cans even turn blue when your beer is cold. That way, you always know when it's time to chill. When you need to hit reset, just open a Coors Light. It's mountain cold refreshment made to chill. And listen, everyone, summer is pretty much here. It's about to get hot in New York. An ice-cold Coors Light is such a perfect way for me to beat that summertime heat. Coors Light is the one I choose when I need to unwind. So when you want to hit reset, reach for the beer that's made to chill. Get Coors Light and the new look delivered straight to your door with Drizzly or Instacart. Coors Brewing Company, Golden, Colorado. And as always, celebrate.
Hail cheaters, welcome to the Always Cheating Fantasy Premier League Podcast. My name is Josh, I'm here with Brandon. Brandon, how are you?
It's a heat wave, Joshua. This is the early stage in the pre-season previews where it's very hot in our mutual apartments.
Yep.
And we respect the audio quality enough where I close the windows to shut out as much ambient noise as I can. So if I pass out at any point during this recording, it's because there's no more air left in my apartment.
Yeah, my trick is to run the AC like full blast for like the 30 minutes before we start recording, then turn it off like the second we start. Yeah, I know. And I've got, as listeners may be able to tell, I've got a little bit of a heat wave head cold, too. So if I sound a little under the weather, I've just got like I'm a little stuffed up. So hopefully it does not affect my analysis, Brandon.
Your analysis is going to be spot on, and let's just forget the head colds. Let's forget the heat. Mm-hmm. It's heating up in many other ways. Preseason coverage for FPL is in full swing. Mm-hmm. We did our price prediction pod, followed by last week's 10 questions that we have ahead of the new season. So if you haven't checked out our recent 10 questions pod, that's evergreen content, baby. You can go back and give that a listen. Here, we're going to start our first of three team-by-team previews out of the Premier League season. We're covering the first seven teams alphabetically. What have we got? Arsenal, Aston Villa, Bournemouth, Brighton, Burnley, Chelsea, and Crystal Palace up today. And then we have two more episodes coming up where we'll hit the rest of these teams.
Yeah, we used to do these as two-parters, and they almost killed us every year. It was like, it was too much content. It was, you know, it was just like, it was overwhelming, I think. And they tend to be kind of long podcasts. So, so we're going with seven this time. And it's still like fair, you know, because the game launched so early, it's still fairly, you know, early in the season. So there's things like Zaha to Arsenal that are still up in the air. But I think we can talk a little bit about what Palace would look like if they keep Zaha, what Arsenal look like if they have Zaha, you know, things like that. So we're just going to run through the first seven teams and give our assessment of those players, talk a little bit about player prices, talk a little bit about early fixtures as well. You know, some teams like Arsenal have just like a really rough run of fixtures. And so I haven't seen them in like anybody's early season, you know, kind of squad, right? You know, Aubameyang. I mean, Aubameyang had 22 goals last year, and I have yet to see him in like anybody's team.
Nor his younger brother, Lacazette.
It's such a great, though, such a great pair.
The Instagram challenge, Mesut Ozil, again, just like the hero of Arsenal official Instagram, So either he has a cousin who runs the social media channels for Arsenal, or somebody at Arsenal believes that Mesut is still an integral part of that team. And we have a few questions about that. But before we get to those team previews, we've got our house cleaning to take care of. First up, it's the always cheating Super League, our public mini league, or a private, I guess, according to the FPL site. But it's the league that everyone, all of our listeners, are welcome to join. We were more than 6,000 managers strong last season. We want even more this season. So if you want to join the Super League with other always cheating listeners, use code DTZ277, or just follow the link that's in the show notes for this episode on all of our social channels, or go to alwayscheating.com for that. Speaking of things you can do at alwayscheating.com, you can use that to redirect yourself to our Patreon page. Ooh. Where if you're a listener of Always Cheating and you like what we do, you've been listening to us for a couple seasons now, or maybe this is even your first episode and you're like, wow, these guys need some financial support. They need my thanks. We would really appreciate it. Anything you can do. It's patreon.com/alwayscheating. You can see in writing what you get in return for your support. But we rejiggered the tiers, the pricing structure for you, the listener. Josh, you want to take us through the new Patreon tiers that we have?
Yeah, it's really only one new tier, I would say. We have a new entry level tier, and that's the Pookie Patron tier. And that gets you access to our private league and access to our private Patreon league, that is, and access to the Always Cheating Slack, which I think is just it's such a respectful Slack, Brandon. It's very earnest and sincere, and people share their teams on there. People like really try to help make them better and like offer valuable advice. So I think our Slack is great. The Lord Sorloff tier, you get everything that I just mentioned, plus access to our one extra podcast a week, which will be starting probably in a couple weeks time. Brady, you got a little vacation coming up, but I think I'm gonna bank a couple Patreon podcasts while you're gone.
Awesome.
And the Volkswagen tier, the Sam Volkswagen tier, you get access to our head-to-head league, and you get a t-shirt too, an Always Cheating t-shirt. And then the producer tier, you get to everything above, plus you get to pick a topic for the podcast, and you get a personalized thank you at the end of every pod.
Awesome. So speaking of thank yous, we just want to say a quick thanks to all our new Patreon supporters since we last podcasted. Coming in strong at the producer level, thank you to Blair Jacobson and Danny Evans. At the Volkswagen level, Leo Howell, our good friend, he upgraded his membership to the Volkswagen level. We'll see you in the head-to-head league, man. At the Lord Sorloff level, it's Josh Seidel, Tim Hamer, Joseph Stern, Bronwyn McDonald, and Brian Connolly. And coming in at the Pookie patron level, thank you to Hank Ruff, Eddie, and James Harden. You guys are all super fans. So thank you for your support. Again, patreon.com/alwayscheating. All right, without further ado, Josh, we'll get into our team-by-team preview, starting with Arsenal. Shall we take a quick break and catch our breath?
Yes, let's do it. All right, Brian, we're back. We're kicking things off with Arsenal, the first team in our 7-team preview today. Arsenal have a pretty crummy run of fixtures to start the season. They actually have two decent matches to kick things off. Newcastle away. Newcastle still doesn't have a manager. And then Burnley home in game week 2. But then they play Liverpool, Spurs, Man United in 3 of the next 5 after that. I also think they have just like a real – it's like a tough opening of the season. I think there's kind of like a wait-and-see type club. You know, the midfield in particular is just incredibly thin. You know, Ozil is 7.5 million, which is just honestly too much considering the returns you've been getting from him. Like 5 goals, mm-hmm. 3 assists last season. He had 4 goals and 9 assists. It's a real legacy price. Based on what he's done the last couple of years, he should be around like 6 million or something. So I don't, you know, obviously they need to beef up that midfield. I think the Zaha thing ultimately will happen. There's just too much smoke around it for not to happen. And it's probably going to end up being some funky, like they're going to send players that way, more like an American style trade, you know, where they send like cash and some players. That's what I've heard at least. So we'll see. We'll see how that all shakes out.
So Alex Iwobi to Crystal Palace is what I'm hearing.
Well, Iwobi actually is one player that I think is a possible bargain pick at 6 million. Three goals and 8 assists last season. He can't really shoot, you know, which is a problem. So if he... You know, but Ramsey was kind of like this too, where I feel like Ramsey was sort of slightly inaccurate player, and then he kind of put it all together that one season, like, you know, 4 or 5 years ago. So I think that he is like another like wait and see kind of player. I think the defenders are priced to buy. You know, I love Koscielny at $5 million. But again, it's like at some point, you know, like yeah, I just don't
right.
have any real desire to start off the season with any Arsenal players, really. What about you?
I agree on the Koscielny pick because he's that type of veteran central defender who he'll probably be wearing the armband a lot if, well, they rotate the armband on Arsenal, which I do find strange, but he is kind of the psychological captain when he's fit, and right. he should start every match. Speaking of thin, they're also thin in the defense, and Mustafi had a legendarily bad season last season.
Yes.
So yeah, I think a player like Koscielny will be key. I just feel like Arsenal on the whole left every Premier League fan with a bad taste in their mouth at the end of last season. They kind of blew their shot at the top four. And in addition to that, got completely annihilated by Chelsea in the Europa League final. So it's like, true. How did Emery, he had all this goodwill at the start of the season and he looked like he had them playing. And then suddenly it is completely evaporated. And now in the off season, it's hard to see what real moves they're making beyond this potential Zaha moved. And let me ask you this about Zaha. And you're a bigger fan of Zaha than I am. Actually, that's a loaded way for me to say it because I just don't like him. But I feel like Emery is tied to this idea that he's a tactician and he plays systems. And Zaha is a creative player of the highest order. Like, I don't think he really fits into rigid systems. Is that a partnership that's going to work at Arsenal?
That's a good question. I mean, you need at least one really creative player in your team, right? I mean, even if you're working under a pretty rigid system, you need somebody who can just kind of make things happen, you know? And I mean, you know, just Aubameyang and Lacazette can get so isolated sometimes, you know, and they're relying on, you know, Guendouzi and Xhaka and all these players to take them through balls from the, you know, from midfield. And like, it's like, I feel like some of the goals that they scored this year were not like patient build-up type goals. They were kind of like long ball type goals that, you know, Lacazette or Aubameyang latched onto. So, I don't know. I think that Zaha would be a really good fit. I mean, I also just think that he's slightly, I mean, he had 10 goals and 11 assists last season. You know, he's only 7 million. I mean, say what you will about him as a player, but I mean, as a fantasy asset, I mean, if you get double digit goals and assists, I think it's gotta be considered a really strong season, you know? And,
right.
And to do that and be back in the midfield and be priced at $7 million, I mean, he'd be a great player to have if that move goes through before the season starts.
Yeah. I think the other bit player in the positive sense that jumps out at me is Bern Leno, priced at 5.0. I think that's an interesting price point for a top six goalkeeper. But yeah, as you say, there's really not much we have to do with Arsenal or worry about at the start of the season. It's just a wait and see of the highest order.
Yeah, and I'm done. Mkhitaryan, I'm done with him. I just don't I don't buy it. He's too inconsistent. So, you know, he's a total non-starter for me. And then Aubameyang and Lacazette. I mean, you know, Lacazette's only 9.5 million. And I mean, I feel like eventually at some point during the season, we'll have these two players, but we're probably not going to have them for like the first 7 weeks of the season. So it's not really worth talking about too much, you know, because I think that, you know, I don't know, if you start looking too far ahead, I think it just kind of throws you off a little bit, you know? So I think I really try to look only about four or five fixtures ahead, sometimes six or seven if I'm planning like, you know, defensive rotation or something like that.
Fantasy aside, what do you think is the realistic target for Arsenal end of the season?
It depends on what their transfer moves are. If they get Zaha, is that enough to challenge for a Champions League spot? It doesn't seem like it. I also worry about them getting older too. Like, this feels like a season where they could finish like eighth or something, you know, like the wheels could really fall off. Although I do think Emery's a good manager. I mean, I know they fell off at the end of the season. So, I don't know, but like, can Aubameyang and Lacazette link up that well again? You know, like it was, I mean, you know, surely teams will start to kind of stop that link up from happening, you know? So, and which obviously Chelsea did, you know, in the Europa League final too. So, Arsenal's just a total, like, non-entity for me right now, and I say that as an Arsenal fan, but I'm just sort of down on the club right now.
You speak as if you are an Arsenal fan. I mean, this is the language of your club at the moment. Just sort of that's not even cautious optimism. It's just a forever downbeat.
Gunners. It's just I feel like it's just cronky. It just starts with him, you know, and having no faith that he's going to like ever build a consistent winner, you know? So yeah. Anyway, let's move on, Brandon. That's a grim note to end on with Arsenal, much like they ended last season. Let's move on to Aston Villa.
Okay, Aston Villa, the first of the promoted teams that we're going to discuss. And they start off with Spurs, where it's going to be a competition between Liverpool and Spurs. Who do you captain? Do you captain Kane against Villa, or do you captain one of your favorite Liverpool midfielders against Norwich? But after Spurs, Villa has a fairly decent run. Two home fixtures, Bournemouth and Everton, then Palace and West Ham before they get to Arsenal in game week 6. So it's not all bad news at the start of the season for the promoted club. The real bad news here is that Villa had a horrible defensive record in the championship. So we kind of just have to sidestep Villa's defenders altogether. Last season, they conceded 61 goals, which was the worst goal concession record of the entire top half of the championship table. Now, in my research, Josh, and you know I do my research, of course, it was
right.
Bournemouth's Tyrone Mings and then Aloni Tonzebe from Manchester United. They came in as late season loans, and they kind of helped turn things around for Villa. But there's no news about Villa getting Mings and Tonzebe back on permanent deals. So they could be back to a really crummy defense at the start of the season. If you would get any defender, I think my money is on El Mohammadi. You remember El Mohammadi playing for Hull City back in the day, maybe?
Mm-hmm. Yep, I do, of course.
So last season for Villa, he was an evergreen starter at right back, but he's versatile. He can be pushed up into the midfield. And I know that you and I really like players that are listed at positions that are farther back than they sometimes actually play. So depending on what other moves happen in the transfer market, if there's any chance that El Mohammadi gets to move farther up into that midfield area, that's nothing but good news. But priced at 4.5, that's really decent. He had 2 goals and 8 assists last season. A lot of people are talking about Matt Target, who will play at left back, probably displacing Neil Taylor, who you'll remember from Swansea, but
sure.
Taylor was playing there in their left back spot last season. Target, I feel like here you kind of go with if you have to get a Villa defender, you go with what the club knows in El Mohammadi, because he's proven and he has a chemistry already with his teammates. Right. That'd be where I would go.
God, those 61 goals conceded, though, that is grim. I actually have an Aston Villa player on my team right now. I think I have El Mohammadi, and I think he may have to go now. I think I may swap him out for a Sheffield United defender. That is some grim data, Brandon.
Yeah. something up in the air is the goalkeeper situation with Villa. This guy, Nyland, he was their number one goalkeeper, I think, up until around game week 28 when he sustained an injury. Then the lovely named Jed Steer. I don't know if players named
Great
Jed.
Name. Mm-hmm.
He took over for Nyland until he got injured again. So they're probably going to be duking it up for top spot unless Villa decides to sign another goalkeeper. But as stated, we aren't really interested there. Where things get really exciting with Villa is in the midfield. Lots of really interesting options. You've got Conor Hourihane, who's priced at 6.0, a little pricey, particularly for a promoted club. But he is the action man. He had 8 goals and 11 assists last season, and he dominates set pieces. So if you're looking for the midfield player at Villa that you know he's going to have the touches, he's going to be putting the dead balls into the box. He took twice as many set pieces as Jack Grealish did last season. So that's one way to make the case for Hourihane over Grealish. Then there's John McGinn, who is the budget option at 5.5 million. He plays in central mid a little bit off to the right. Last season, he had an impressive 7 goals and 9 assists. But the downsides or one thing we have to expect from McGinn is he is the tackles and interceptions man. So
okay.
Say you're feeling really good. McGinn is in your – maybe he's first off the bench and he's got an assist. Guaranteed he's going to come off with a yellow card by the end of that match. So
okay, yeah,
he's got a bit of a issue with discipline. Then we get to Jack Grealish. Josh, just give me your 30-second pitch on Jack Grealish, or, well, or just what do you think about him?
Yeah, promising young player. I like that he had a chance to move back to the Premier League last year, decided that he would stay with Aston Villa for one more season and try to get them up. I like that he got punched in the back of the head and then scored the game-winning goal in a match, yeah. match last season. Like, I like him as a character, you know?
Yes.
But as a fantasy asset, I'm not really I don't know. I'm not really feeling it, especially not at $6 million.
Yeah, $6 million does feel pricey. The numbers, if you look at Jack's performance over last season versus a guy like Hourihane, slightly skewed because Grealish was out with injury for 3 to 4 months in the middle point of the season. However, he was able to finish on 6 goals and 7 assists. So there is a possibility that Grealish could emerge in some small window during the season as like a flavor of the month type player.
Okay.
The one we're going to have to contend with in terms of pronunciations, it's Jota, spelled exactly like Wolverhampton's Jota. Mm-hmm. So he's come in with some fanfare and price to boot at $6 million. What I don't like about Jota, though, if you look at his numbers where at Birmingham City, where he played prior to this move, since 2017, he's only scored 8 goals for Birmingham. So he's not really a goal scorer. He's just big into key passes. He's an assist guy.
That price is crazy.
It is crazy. I think so. But if you're looking for an assist guy, I think Hourihane, who is going to be on those dead ball situations, plus he's playing a little more centrally and has a more of a nose for goal, I think Hourihane is the pick over Jota. I was talking on the Slack with our producer, Christian Carter, and he is a big Villa supporter, and he flagged El Ghazi, who is a Dutch player, attacking midfielder for Villa, 5.5. This is Chris's pick for a perhaps under-the-radar bargain for Villa. 6 goals, 6 assists last season, and he registered a shot nearly every 37 minutes, which is a better rate than both Grealish and McGinn. So El Ghazi, if you are shy 0.5 to get the likes of Grealish or Hourihane, maybe go for El Ghazi.
Yeah, I think he scored the game-winning goal in the championship playoff too, didn't he? I feel like that's one of the
much to Lampard's chagrin, which we will be talking about Frank Lampard coming up here in a few minutes when we get to Chelsea. Speaking of goal scoring, though, Josh, not much to say about forwards here on Villa. The big signing they made up front was this Brazilian 22-year-old guy, Wesley, priced at $6 million. He comes from Bruges in Belgium, and he has not managed to score more than 10 goals in a season, even in the Belgian league for a top club there. So his goal scoring record is unproven. And I feel like teams such as Villa, promoted sides that really are only going to succeed based on just a cohesive team performance, I don't have any space for a guy like Wesley.
Okay, so it's stay away from the defense, most likely. Consider the midfield and stay away from Wesley.
I guess the three picks I'd throw at you would be El Mohammadi in defense, Hourihane, or El Ghazi in the midfield.
Okay. All right. I mean, it's kind of fun. Like, it's I don't know why they're, maybe it's because Aston Villa was in the Premier League for a long time or something, but I don't know why these prices seem like the prices of like a, not like a promoted team, right? Don't they seem like they're like a little high?
Bournemouthy. I'm getting Bournemouth vibes from these prices, which of course is our next team.
Yeah. Bournemouth, great start to the season. One bad fixture at Man City at home, game week 3. And even that is at home, so it's not like, you know, the players you would have are not unplayable for that match. But they play two promoted teams to kick off the season, Sheffield United and Aston Villa, then Leicester, Everton, Southampton, West Ham. So, you know, Bournemouth is, we all kind of know the story at this point. The defense is like pretty consistently a disaster. You know, it's just their style of play. I mean, it's why people like to watch Bournemouth, you know, like they're they're, you know, really attacking team, really fun to watch. And they win a lot of games.
They play the right way, Josh.
Well, they play the fun way. That's for sure. Yeah. And so, you know, let's talk right now that that Ake may leave this offseason. Possibly go to Manchester City.
Can you believe that rumor?
I mean, he's a great player. I mean, a very, very extremely good player anyway.
Yeah.
Yeah, but then would he even start? Is he like, he'd be like third string?
Oh, no way. No, no way. It's a strange one. I feel like Ake looked like a great player when he was on loan at Bournemouth from Chelsea. And then when he became a permanent signing for Bournemouth, maybe it just coincides with not just a all-around defense at Bournemouth, but my faith in him has been shaken over the last two seasons.
Yeah, and if he leaves Bournemouth, I mean, that my faith in that defense will be non-existent.
Yes.
So yep. So let's move on to the players that are fun. We've got Ryan Fraser, 7 goals, 14 assists last season, a massive jump from 5 goals and 3 assists the season before, an 11-assist jump. That's so massive.
That's a breakout season. That's what I call that.
True breakout season. Really fun player to watch. He's like 5'3" or something, and just, you know, runs around just like a little ball of energy. And I love Fraser. He came in a little expensive, you know, 7.5 million. It's a tough spot for.
Yeah.
I mean, he deserves it, right? I mean, 7 goals and 14 assists. That's you know, it's a great returns, but I don't know. It's. Is that price throwing you off at all, the 7.5 million?
It absolutely is. I had thought he was going to come in at something closer to 6.5, maybe 7, and that's more appealing. But Fraser, it's like I was talking about dead balls with a guy like Hourihan. Fraser, you know he's going to have those touches. He's going to take indirect set pieces, corner kicks. You will – and that gives me somewhat more confidence that I'm getting my money's worth.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
and, but compared to other players in that price range, just spending 0.5 more to get a player like Sigurdsson, who you know is on penalties and is playing on a team that is probably going to be competing for top six by the end of the Premier League season, is so much more appealing to me.
Yeah, you would think so. Although, I mean, I do think that the fixtures for Bournemouth can't be ignored. I think that they're so good that maybe it does elevate a player like Fraser. The one that I really have a problem with is Callum Wilson at 8 million. That is a very tough price. And I, you know, you can get Josh King for 1.5 million cheaper for 6.5 million. You know, King had 12 goals and 3 assists last season. I mean, in some ways, he really is the lesser version of Wilson. You know, Wilson had 14 goals and 12 assists. King is like kind of, I feel like he's sort of been a late starter, like a late bloomer the last couple of years, where, you know, a lot of us had King at the start of last season. And it turned out that Callum Wilson was the way to go. And now you sort of worry that it's going to flip. You know, and that we're all going to have, you know, Wilson, and that I guess we're not though. I guess we're all like, we're going to fall into the same trap, aren't we? We're just going to have Josh King again. We got to hope that he is late season Josh King when the season kicks off.
The trap we're going to fall into is we're all going to get David Brooks because he's the cheapest, and Wilson, King and Fraser are all going to come out like a barn on fire and be fantastic. That is my worry. But with Josh King, we're starting to build a pattern here with evidence. You said King was a late bloomer last season. And the reason why we had him at the start of last season is because he finished the season so strong prior to that. Mm-hmm. So kind of like what we see with Richarlison, where he starts the season strong. And now we've seen that at Watford and Everton twice, to where we're starting to see a pattern with him. Maybe we could say the same for Josh King. Yeah, we could just expect him to come on stronger later in the season.
Yeah. And is that like I wonder if that is like a real thing, or if it just feels that way, you know? Is that like, I mean, do players really consistently, like across the board, I mean, we just named two players, but is that like a real thing that some players are just consistently stronger, you know?
Harry Kane can't score in August. Is part of the same argument? I don't know. I mean, a lot of it does smack of superstition or sort of like
just lack of gambler fallacy or something. Yeah.
Right. But you know, I'm just trying to create podcast content here, Josh.
So I think those are really the four players to talk about. I mean, I currently have Brooks in my squad. I could see myself talking. I could talk myself into Fraser at some point. It's just tricky, you know, because I mean, like the Man City players are so expensive. A lot of people are loading up on expensive defenders this season. And I just don't know if there's room for somebody like that, you know, somebody like Ryan Fraser. So it's tricky, but I do think at the start of the season, I will have at least one. I may have two Bournemouth players, but that seems like a bit much, doesn't it? Two Bournemouth attackers, even with those fixtures.
It does. But David Brooks and Josh King, which I assume those would be the two players you're talking about, I think that could be a pretty popular combo just given the price per points you're expecting and the fixtures that you mentioned. I don't have a huge problem with that. I mean, if I have one, it will probably be David Brooks.
Yep. Yep. Same. Or maybe,
I have no, problem with Josh King.
All right. Let's move on to Brighton.
Brighton. I think maybe we can keep this short. Brighton, I think, generally as a club in the Premier League, they're just running out of gas. We saw that with Chris Hughton at the end of last season, was just kind of throwing his arms up in the air like, what more can I do? I've gotten everything I can. I've squeezed every last drop out of this this lemon that is Brighton. Yeah. And fair enough. And I mean, are you at all wooed, though, by this run of fixtures that they start the season with? Watford, West Ham, Southampton, Burnley, and Newcastle, in the first six?
I'm really not. I mean, I think that Brighton are terrible, and they really should have been relegated last season, and I don't have any faith they're going to be any better this year. You know, I mean, that's like the same thing happened last year, you know, where we all got sucked into having some Brighton defenders down the stretch, and it just didn't work out. It was just a disaster. And, you know, the team isn't going to look that different next year, even with the new manager. So, I don't have a ton of faith in Brighton. I'm really not considering them.
Right. And the new manager, Graham Potter, who comes to Brighton from Swansea, it doesn't bode well because Graham Potter is trying to make himself synonymous with this possession based attacking football, which is probably just suicide for Brighton. That said, Potter did take Swansea to the FA Cup quarterfinal last season. They went up 2 goals against Manchester City before Aguero put them to the sword at the final moment. So that is impressive. And I think we're all ready. If Brighton is going to go down, let's have him go down playing some somewhat more exciting football. But that doesn't mean we have to take part in them as an FPL experiment. The biggest point to the biggest thing to point out in the defense is David Button, backup goalkeeper to Matty Ryan, priced at 4.0 million, currently 22.6% ownership. Astounding. So
is that an auto pick thing? Is that what that is? That's
It's an auto pick thing, or what it tells me is absolutely no one is fooling around with goalkeeper rotation heading into game week one. It's like, let's put 4.0 bench guy on the bench, and then I'm going to go with my premium goalkeeper.
Yeah, that's true. It'd be interesting to see if any of their attacking players break out. I mean, we had the Pascal Gross season 2 years ago. Last season, he had just this incredibly snake-bitten year, injured a ton of the time. He was getting subbed at like the 55th minute constantly. Like, I mean, I'm sure it was just like getting managed because he was coming back from injury, but, he's a fantastic player. And if they do have him, you know, Potter, you know, is a more attacking manager, then maybe there's something there. I don't know.
Yeah, I think that they're all appropriately priced, these midfielders, like Davey Proper, super cheap, Gross 6.5 Knockhart, as you mentioned, Murray, but there's really no upside with Brighton. The new signing that they've made as of this recording is left winger Leandro Trossard. He's a 24-year-old Belgian who comes to us by way of Genk. Okay. Scored 14 goals and 7 assists last season. So I will look forward to watching him take the pitch.
I love all of the – I mean, like, Brighton, I will give them credit. They raid random nation football clubs like nobody else. You know, they're constantly dipping into the Swiss league or the Belgium league. Unfortunately, it hasn't really worked out. I guess, you know, Pascal Gross came from the Bundesliga, but that's a slightly different kettle of fish, you know. So yeah, I mean, it's just looking at this team right now, I mean, Glenn Murray is gonna only getting older, you know, and Lacadia and Doan, those players had some moments last season, but I don't know. They're a little bit like Arsenal. They're just kind of like a wait and see club. Like, so let's see if the new manager makes any kind of difference with that club.
Total hit job on Shane Duffy with the 5.0 price tag. We can no longer have him, particularly when Lewis Dunk is right next to him at 4.5. So Shane Duffy, it was fun while it lasted. Goodbye forever.
Sad but true, Brandon. Sad but true. All right, let's take a quick break and we'll get back with our final three teams.
Josh, let's take a quick minute for our good friends at fantasyfootballhub.co.uk. It is a virtual one-stop shop for all of your fantasy football news.
This was started a few years ago, and the idea is so good that I'm still jealous that we didn't think of it ourselves. The site collects thoughts, articles, videos, podcasts from all of the top thinkers in the game. People like Matthew Jones, people like Will Thomas himself, who's had a ton of he's got started the site. He's got a ton of great finishes himself, six top 10K finishes. It's got people like Adam Hopcraft, and then it's got Ben Krellen too, the legendary Ben Krellen with the transfer spreadsheet.
Become a member of Fantasy Football Hub. I'm just going to refer to it as the Hub, Josh. Become a member of the Hub today, and you can gain access to a ton of great members-only features. Those features include a new Opta data tool, advanced fixture tickers and comparison tools, the Rate My Team tool, all that great stuff, a handy preseason guide on how to win at FPL. As mentioned, Ben Krellen, he has a special FPL planning sheet right there that you can access. Over 100 membership articles a year, including weekly team reveals from top-ranked managers in FPL, become available at your fingertips at the Hub. And also, when you become a member, you get entered into the £5,000 members-only league prize. That is a huge, insane prize.
It's kind of insane.
So become a member today. You can get 10% off your membership for being an always cheating listener. Head over to fantasyfootballhub.co.uk/always and use the code always when you purchase that membership. 10%
right.
off.
That's right. And we'll see you there. Brandon, we're back. We're here to talk about Burnley. Burnley, who doesn't want to talk about Burnley? I feel like I'm talking about Burnley all the time with my family, my friends, my 2.5-year-old daughter. I mean, everyone wants to talk Burnley all the time.
You're burning for Burnley, Joshua.
Burnley is the prices are good this year. They're priced like the sort of bottom of the table team that they were last season, you know, after the one-off Europa League campaign. The question here is Heaton, Pope, and Hart – all 4.5 million, but who starts? Heaton did reject a contract extension, and he's been linked with Watford and Aston Villa and some others. So that Aston Villa goalkeeper rotation we talked about earlier may actually – Tom Heaton may actually take that spot. That'll be interesting. I would at least consider having a Burnley defender to start off the season. They have a very good fixture at home, Southampton in game week one. Then a couple of tricky fixtures with Arsenal and Liverpool. But then they play Brighton, Norwich, Aston Villa, and Everton in the four matches to follow. And I don't know. I just expect them to bounce back a little bit this year. It feels fluky how poorly they were. And like you said, I think the Europa League was just a huge factor there. So, so we talked about Tarkowski. We talked about Charlie Taylor. Taylor is the one that I would advocate for at 4.5 million. Dwight McNeil, not cheap, but he could still be worth that price if he continues to develop. He is a fantastic player. You know, I think I've said this before, but I don't know how much longer he's going to stay at that club because he's a big player. He's just really dominant. He can score from outside the box. He's fast. So I think this season could be a great season for Dwight McNeil. I mean, you know, it's a hard sell at 6 million. If it was 5.5 million, I'd probably have him in my team to start off. 6 million is just that tricky, like, extra 0.5.
I agree. You talk about Ryan Fraser having his breakout season last season and the numbers he had for Bournemouth prior to, so like 5 goals and however many assists. Dwight McNeil seems like he is part of that select group that could have a Fraser-esque breakout season.
Yep.
If that is the case, then 6 million, is kind of a bargain, particularly on a consistent club like Burnley.
Yep. And the other players at that same price is Goodmanson, consistent but unspectacular. 3 goals, 7 assists last season, 2 and 9 the season before that. And then they have 2 6.5 million one-dimensional strikers. Brandon, your boy, Ashley Barnes, who
we've all had good times with him.
Sure. He cracked cracked the 10 goal mark last year. He had finished with 12 goals and 3 assists, 9 goals and 0 assists the season before. Wood and Barnes are both kind of classic old school center forwards, you know, where they just score a lot of headed goals. They're trying to score on set pieces in the box. So they're not spectacular fantasy assets. I mean, they will get you 10 or 12 goals in a season, but I don't really like having players like that. Chris Wood had a slightly snake-bitten season. He had a few injuries, and I thought he played well when he was healthy. So Wood is the one player that I would consider.
Wood is a decent target, man. And if we would take this Dwight McNeil logic to its natural conclusion, is I think something that you didn't mention with McNeil is his ability to cross from the wing. If you've got a target man like Chris Wood and he stays healthy and it's all working, I could see his output being better than Barnes this season. I actually, if I had a gun to my head, your favorite threat to make against me, Josh, I would probably go Chris Wood to start the season over Ashley Barnes if I had to have one of these Burnley strikers.
I know that's hard for you to say because he is your boy, but I agree. So I don't think we need to spend too long at Burnley. It's kind of same as it ever was. The big question is who's going to start at keeper. And if it's Pope, that is a 4.5 million option in Pope would not be bad. I think last year they were all 5 million, the keepers, and they were just a little too much to bring in. But I think you could get away with some goalkeeper rotation at 4.5.
Pope is a classic shot stopper keeper as well. Like what everyone thought they loved about Fabianski last season was he's going to get his hands in the ball. He's going to get those save points. And the same could be said about Pope.
Yep, exactly. So we'll see. We'll see what happens there. It does seem like Keaton might be on the way out, though. Yeah. All right, Brendan, moving on to Chelsea.
Chelsea, new manager Frank Lampard saying goodbye to the very short-lived Sarri era. It was intermittently fun and terrifying at the same time. we'll all remember where we were when Kepa refused to come off the pitch in the League
moment.
Cup final.
Yep.
Chelsea starts off the season with an away match at Old Trafford, which I mean, all the headlines here are just going to be about Frank Lampard and probably all the things that he himself has done as a player at Old Trafford. I will make no predictions as to what this team is going to look like and how they're going to play with Lampard. But the one thing that does stick out in my mind is Chelsea's defense and just how experienced they all are. There's been no talk of any of these guys agitating for moves. So you still have FPL legends like Aspilicueta and Marcus Alonso, who very well could be losing his spot to Emerson, and David Luiz, and Rudiger, who's still out with a knee injury or what was the issue? Yeah, he had knee surgery at the end of last season. So a lot of people are pegging Christensen as a wild card for starting the season with a Chelsea central defender priced to sell at 5 million because Rudiger will be still out for an indeterminate amount of time, still rehabbing that knee. Is that a cheap, easy way into the defense? Kepa, as I said in our 10 questions podcast last week, Josh, probably for me is the best of the 5.5 million goalkeepers. Mm-hmm. And I would slot him above Hugo Lloris also at 5.5 because I personally still have a lot of questions about the quality of Spurs defense at the moment.
Right. I thought you didn't really like Kepa though either. Are you coming around on Kepa a little bit?
Well, I'm very fond of joking around about how Kepa is good for being 3'6" high. He's very short. I don't really gravitate toward his personality. But on the whole, I think 14 clean sheets for Chelsea last season. As I said, their experience. I think I like Chelsea's defensive setup. And if I can't afford to get a 6.0 goalkeeper like Alisson or Ederson in, I think Kepa is next on the list for me.
Yeah, I don't love their fixtures to start the season, though. I think there's some really, at least for clean sheets, I could see some really tricky ones. Man United away, even Leicester at home, Wolves away, Liverpool at home. I mean, I sort of see maybe two possible clean sheets and six from them to start the season.
Yeah, it's that Norwich and Sheffield United match in game weeks 3 and 4 that really do stand out. So I tend to agree that Chelsea defense is something maybe we come back to when we start discussing our early wild cards. God forbid we all have to play them. But jumping into the midfield, intriguing low prices here. In the event that Lampard actually quickly solidifies what the lineup is going to be and that they actually are playing well, I think there are some real options here. Christian Pulisic, 20-year-old American from Dortmund. He his stats from last season slightly skewed, not only because he was plagued by injury, but also the Chelsea transfer news hit in January. And so he was kind of slowly being phased out at Dortmund because of that, and also because of the rise of Sancho, who was playing in Pulisic's spot and was playing so well. So yeah, it goes two ways with Pulisic this season. I think he's just one of the scapegoats when Lampard can't get this team playing well, or I think he earns that 7.5 price tag. I mean, the fact that he's priced higher than both Willian and Pedro at 7.0, I predict various double game week conundrums of who do I go for? Do I take the cheaper option with Willian or Pedro, who have always forever been rotation concerns, or do I go with Pulisic? I don't know.
Yeah, and you know, just going back to our price prediction pods, you and I both thought he would come in higher than he did. I am at 8.5 million. You had him at 8 million. So, you know, I think that just based on our kind of first impression, you know, I do think that I don't know how much of being Americans like sort of biases us a little bit there, but I do think that he's a real player to watch.
Yeah.
These
guys aren't going to be factors at the start of the season because of injury, but Hudson-Odoi and Loftus-Cheek. Lampard he's kind of started to make his name at Derby, and things that he's said in pressers that he loves to promote talent and academy talent. So he will be eyeing Hudson-Odoi and Loftus-Cheek once they're healthy. What is most interesting to me in terms of what Lampard is going to do with the midfield is where is he going to play Conte and how does Jorginho fit in? So in Sarri's system, Jorginho, who is priced this season at 5.0, played farther back. He received the ball from the back line and started picking the passes to move the play forward. He was very ineffective as an FPL option. But Conte, through Sarri, was made to play farther forward. And then we all had great follies with Conte last season where we thought we were going to make it work because he had a cheap price point and was intermittently scoring goals.
Four goals and four assists. Not bad for a 5 million player.
No, not at all. So I think if Lampard thinks he's going to move Conte farther back, because I think the conventional wisdom is Conte's game is sitting farther back and just breaking up play, tackling, winning possession back, and then making the smart pass. Does that actually push Jorginho farther up into the attack? And at 5.0, if that happens and Jorginho plays, plus he's on pens, as we saw last season with Hazard, not on the pitch, Jorginho was taking and scoring pens, he could actually be a pick for our FPL squads.
Okay, fair enough. I was sort of not a believer last week, but I feel like you made a much stronger case this time. So we'll see.
Thank you to whoever brought up this conversation on FPL Reddit. When we posted the pod, he wanted to talk more about us being down on Jorginho. And I think just having that conversation on Reddit helped to clarify some of my thoughts. Now, obviously, not having seen a single preseason match under Lampard with this team, we just can't say for sure, but I think there are some intriguing possibilities.
Yeah,
I think so. The big question, though, of course, is at striker, is Giroud actually a bargain at 7 million, or are Tammy Abraham or Michy Batshuayi going to be a factor? They're not even priced in the game yet, so we don't know how big of a bargain Tammy is going to be or Bats is going to be. I'm not sure what the deal is there, but if Giroud starts, and I guess I do tend to agree with you, Josh, in that the start of the season isn't all that great. So Chelsea will forgive FPL managers. We have some time to get it right, to see what the lineups are looking like. I don't think Giroud is going to be a super hot commodity unless he comes out firing against Manchester United in game week one.
Sure. But, the bandwagon.
Yeah. If we at least see that he's starting, I think that come to game week 7 or 8, I think Giroud might be an actual option.
Okay. Yeah, I'll buy that. Or whomever, I guess, wins the spot.
Do you have a favorite on that list of strikers that you'd actually like to see?
Yeah, I like Batshuayi. I just like his, I don't know, I like his pace. I like his strength. I just see him as somebody who could be a kind of ticks a lot of the boxes for being a good Premier League striker, you know, and he's done really well in limited moments, you know, scored a couple big goals for Chelsea a couple seasons ago, came out of the gate really hot for Palace when he joined on loan for, I guess it was a half season loan. So I'm sort of I don't know. I just sort of like him. And Tammy Abraham, I just worry about him because I think he's too slight. I think he is quite strong enough to be a consistent Premier League
starter. He had an amazing season, 26 goals for Villa last year. But it's like it's the Dwight Gayle effect. Like these strikers can be built for the level of play in the Championship, which is high, and it's physically grueling. But it's an entirely different ballgame in the Premier League. And I agree. I'm not sure Tammy is equipped for that just yet.
Yeah, I don't think so either. So let's, maybe at 25 he breaks out. Right. All right, Brad, one last club, Crystal Palace. A lot is happening right now at Palace. They could end up having 130 million or something to spend on players this offseason. They have a great start to the season, but who's still going to be there? Millie came in at 7 million, kind of just way. I mean, I don't know. He was good last year, 12 goals, 2 assists, but 7 million is a bit pricey. The game kind of broke my heart by pricing Gaita at 5 million. I don't really know why he's priced at 5 million. It does seem like 4.5 would be a perfectly reasonable price. He had 7 clean sheets and limited minutes last season. Just kind of an odd one.
It is strange.
And then we talked about Zaha already. Who knows? It looks like he's probably going to leave. So the question there is, who benefits from that? I wrote down here that, I think Townsend could benefit from Zaha leaving, but does it mean the return of bad Townsend? I'm just going to make stuff happen kind of.
He has no one to pass to, so he just has to shoot every single time instead of only 75% of the time.
Just trying to score spectacular goals. Instead of just trying to be a consistent goal scorer.
What about Jeffrey Schlupp? Does he benefit? I mean, he's been reclassed as a midfielder this season. I think Schlupp is at 6.0. 5.5.
It's not bad. Four goals and 3 assists last year, but I don't know. I guess I'm not feeling Schlupp as a midfielder. If he was a 5.5 million defender, maybe I'd be a little more excited about him, but I don't know.
I'm not going to blame you for that one.
Yeah. And then I feel like the rest of this team is kind of a little overpriced across the board. MacArthur's 5.5 million. Weirdly enough, Zaha is the only player who I think is a very reasonable price at 7 million. Yeah. Coyote at 5 million could be interesting. Max Meyer, I had no idea why he came in at 5.5 million. He had 1 goal and 3 assists last year. And I guess maybe he's priced that way because they think that he'll be in a more advanced role or something when, if Zaha leaves. This is a kind of weirdly high price. And then the forwards are just a disaster. You've got Benteke, Connor Wickham, maybe Sorloth. I mean, I think he's on a 2-year loan deal, so I don't think he'll be coming back.
You got to recall that, man. We need you, Lord Sorloth. We need you.
Lord Sorloth, come back. Please come back. So, I can't say that I'm really – the fixtures are good, to start off the season, but I just don't really know who I'd have. There's a little bit of talk that if they don't replace, Patrick Van Aanholt, immediately, then maybe – maybe Scott Kelly, is an interesting option at 4 million, Martin Kelly, Scott Dan at 4.5 million, possibly interesting. But I feel like this is a little bit of another wait and see club. I guess I'm saying this a lot, but it's just hard to know what this team is going to look like because presumably they're going to start spending this 100 million, right?
Yeah.
And, let's say they don't sell Zaha. They still have 55 million or something from Patrick Van Aanholt. Aaron Wan-Bissaka, not Van Aanholt, of course.
Right.
Yeah.
I was going to say, what news am I not reading? This is amazing.
Yeah. So, because I'm not really sure who the who would replace him, to start off the season. So I suspect they end up buying somebody. I don't know if it's somebody we'll want to have, but I think it's a little too early to tell. Millie is one of those players. You probably have him for a double game week, 25 weeks from now. But he's not a player that I expect to consistently have in my squad. Townsend. So maybe Townsend is the one player to watch. He's cheap at 6 million. It's a good start to this. Everton, Southampton, Aston Villa, and 3 of the first 4. It's a very strong start for Palace. So I actually think I probably will have one Palace defender. I'm just not sure which one I'll have yet. Maybe I lean towards Scott Dan just for what I would expect to be a little more consistency.
Sacco, and it's all injury issues. Sacco and Tompkins are, I think, the natural starting central pair. But
right.
Let's see, what are their prices? Both at 5.0. It's, mm-hmm. I would say I might be okay with that because when the chips are down, say Zaha goes off to Arsenal or elsewhere and they don't have a compelling attacking replacement. When the chips are down for Roy Hodgson, he does one thing and he plays defense.
Right.
So I do like the defensive shout.
All right. So we'll talk more about them in the coming weeks. Let's see who they buy first. Brandon, that's the podcast.
Simple as that.
Yeah, simple as that. I thought this was going to be like a 30-minute pod. Of course, it's like an hour.
Well, we do have some pretty compelling teams to preview in our next episode, which will cover six teams. Everton, Leicester, Liverpool, Manchester City, Man United, and Newcastle. It's some humongous heavy hitters coming up for us to discuss. So I'm looking forward to that. Okay, just another reminder, if you enjoy what you hear, if you want to thank us for what we do, visit Josh and myself at our Patreon page, patreon.com/alwayscheating. And of course, a big thank you, as ever, to our producers, Mike DiPietro, Stephen Toomey, Carl Rasmus, Leni Granley, Chris Howell, Martin Savage, Jim Payne, Adam Benjamin, James Holland, Oyvind Anderson, Jazz Binning, Brian T., Trevor Ingerson, Chris Carter, the Big Gaffer, Bobas Kuhn, Jeff Husby, Ben Grant, Andy Penn, Blair Jacobson, and Danny Evans. Welcome back, Danny. Don't forget to subscribe to the podcast. We're on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, SoundCloud, Google Play, Acast, wherever fine podcasts are found. And this is the time, the preseason. If you can really help us and help other people find the Always Cheating podcast by giving us a review on iTunes or wherever it is that you subscribe. Josh, you love the social media. You're always on there dispensing wonderful wisdom. Where can people find us and keep up with us on things like Twitter and so on and so forth?
Yeah, you can follow us on Twitter. We're at Hail Cheaters, Instagram at Hail Cheaters, Facebook.com/alwayscheating. You can email us with any questions, hailcheaters@gmail.com. If you missed any of this, you can visit the website, alwayscheating.com.
And if you're hearing this before Sunday, the Women's World Cup final, good luck to our women who will be fighting against the worthy opponent, that is the Netherlands. Mm-hmm. That's the tea, Josh. And on that note, I think we'll sign off.
All right. Hail Lord Surloff. Please come back.
Yeah. Praise Pookie.
Yeah, praise Pookie. And I can't wait to talk about Pookie.
All right. See you, Josh.
See you, Brian.
Whether you're a world-class athlete or a podcaster like me, we all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. That's why I'm excited that Unified Healing is sponsoring this podcast. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement System, or EE System. If you haven't heard of the EE System, you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. In hundreds of locations across the globe, access to a center is easy and affordable. Interested in experiencing the EE System technology for yourself? Go to unifiedhealing.com/bluewire to learn more and find a center near you. That's unifiedhealing.com/bluewire. No material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including EE System.